back to Badass Bitches Tarot for the week of July 14th through July 20th. This is your host, Cardzy B. As many of you already know, I'm a tarot reader and fashion industry survivor based in New York City. I began learning tarot when I was still in elementary school, and since then have turned my hobby into a tarot practice and the creation of my own deck, Badass Bitches Tarot by Cardzy B. I know it's been a little crazy due to eclipse season. We're heading towards the second one, a lunar eclipse in Capricorn this coming Tuesday, July 16th. Also, Mercury officially went retrograde last Sunday and will continue to do so until July 31st. So we have all of July pretty much now in Mercury retrograde. I recently posted a photo of Elizabeth Moss's character from The Handmaid's Tale smoking a cigarette with a, well, here we go kind of face. Like, it was just like a, well, fuck. And I posted this to explain that I pretty much feel the same way about Mercury retrograde and intense astral energy as I do about The Handmaid's Tale. Meaning, I get why people don't like these things due to the darkness involved, but personally, I love The Handmaid's Tale, and I'm going to embrace this astro shit show that's on the way into us for the same reasons. It gives us the opportunity to lean into our fears and work with our shadows, and unify with other badass bitches and ascend. It can definitely be anxiety-inducing at points, but also is an awesome time for growth and expansion. So I'm like, alright, here we go. As we're heading through this, don't forget we have two really awesome cards for July that are working in our corner. We have the powerful Cancer energy of the Chariot just bursting in like Miley on a wrecking ball. And this is likely to bring in some successes this month, especially around emotional progress, blocks we want to clear, opening up roads that can lead to bigger and more aligned successes, and our other card of the month, which is Three of Cups. That super fun Mercury and Cancer energy that creates a delicious flow of abundance worth celebrating. It's really a great time to honor ourselves and our progress and celebrate these wins with our core people. So that being said, let's take a look at the card of the week. Knight of Cups. Okay, interesting. So, in the OG Smith Rider Waite deck, this is a stereotypical white knight on a white horse, and he's offering up this golden cup. We know that, and we know what white knights mean from fairy tales, obviously, and we know that cups represent love, connection, emotion. So this is traditionally known as the romantic knight and like the romantic card of the deck. It's often a sign of creativity, love, passion on the way into you. And this can be, you know, more kind of traditional in that it's a new love interest. It can also be an increased connection in an existing relationship, whether that's a romantic partnership or a friendship. It can also be a new fulfilling kind of passion project that's on the way into you. The Knight of Cups evokes these emotions within you and kind of gives you the energy and inspiration to pursue what may have just been a dream. Like it could be something, you know, that you wanted to be in this amazing connected relationship, or you had a kind of an idea or a little bit of a vision around a passion project. But the energy of Knight of Cups this week is likely to actually bring in people or opportunities that allow you to push these dreams a little bit more closely into reality. So I adore this card. In Badass Bitches Tarot, it's Dolly Parton, the sweetest little romantic diva and literally one of my first childhood crushes. So when I was drawing this card, I was like, has to be Dolly P. And astrologically, since court cards have elemental rather than, you know, planet or constellation rulings, we're working with the elements of air and water in this card. And again, water being that emotional, loving, you know, connection-based energy, and the element of air really moves that along and brings it closer, brings it more present and center front into your life this week. So loving Knight of Cups, and we haven't had this card, I don't think, on the podcast at all, so I'm excited about it. Yay, Dolly Parton. Speaking of amazing Cups energy, I am so, so excited to chat with this week's guest. I've referenced him a million times in previous podcasts. He is an incredibly gifted and powerful shamanic healer, teacher, tarot reader, and artist, Christopher Beaver. Hey, Christopher, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you today?
I am good. I am so excited to finally have you on the podcast. Everyone who listens knows that I talk about you, I quote you, I give unsolicited advice to my friends sometimes quoting you because you're the most amazing healer I've ever worked with.
For those of you, for the listeners who don't know the background, I met Christopher Beavers, I want to say was it like a year and a half ago maybe? And he is an incredible jeweler and artist in addition to his healing work. And he created the entire Songlines collection with Jewel, Songlines by Jewel. So definitely check it out. I'm going to link to that in this podcast. And I was working with Jewel on kind of the branding and some of the elements of that. And then from that point on, we just hit it off and I started working with you as a healer as well. So I'm so excited to have you on.
Well, thank you. I'm so honored to be here. It's a lovely connection. So,
incredible.
All right, where do you want to go? I'm really anxious to get started. So where do you want to go today?
I mean, there's a million questions and a million things I want to discuss. So I'll try to keep it focused. I guess to start out, can you share a little bit about how you began your journey into healing work? Like, how did this come to you as a profession? Where did it all start?
You know, it started quite young. I think I'm very lucky. I started studying shamanism around the age of 12. And that means that I have been studying it for about 33, 34 years now. And I was really blessed and gifted to be able to work with women who had been their healers and their tribal identities, and their mothers were the healers. And I was very lucky to study a very interesting form of, you know, modern spirituality that is really rooted in indigenous beliefs. And I just still to this day have so much gratitude, because the kind of shamanism that I learned was very feminine, and it wasn't necessarily about gaining power, but it was about learning how to be in relationship to our environment and understanding the depth of those relationships and the contact that occurs from that, whether it's about a person or a plant or a tree or the idea of God. It was always this profound opening. And I remember when I was 16, my teacher asked me and gave me the opportunity to ask any question that I wanted to. And I didn't know what to ask. I wasn't prepared. So I thought I would ask this really great question. Like, okay, well, if I can ask any question I want, I said, you know, what is God? And she goes, is that really all you want to know? Well, that caught me off guard. I thought I was asking this really great, deep, you know, metaphysical, existential question. And she's like, is that really all you want to know? And I said, well, yeah. And she goes, God is five things: life, death, birth, decay, and creation. She said, these are five energies that exist outside of you. And they are the same energies that exist inside of you. Cells are being born, creating, birthing, living, decaying, dying. It's the same energies that are around you in nature. She called them primal powers. And so I was studying how to get into relationship to nature through shamanism. And by that, I got this really amazing internal connection. She said, you know, there's an old saying, as above, so below, as within, so it is without. And I never really understood that as it is within, so it is without. And this sentence really illuminated this idea, you know, what is really within us, this governing intelligence that moves and animates our body, and how to get in touch with that, whether you want to call it your soul, your vital force. It doesn't matter what term you want to put to it. It does translate to the same thing. So by being able to get in touch with that, we can be in a deeper relationship with nature. And so this just kind of was my life. My parents were really lovely in the sense that my mother was really my champion, and I'm very close to my mother, and she really allowed me to do whatever I wanted to. So I had a sweat lodge in my backyard in modern suburbia. And
that's incredible. I did not know that. That's amazing.
Yeah. There were dead animal parts and, you know, the garage. And, you know, I was, you know, allowed to go sit out in the woods and study and disappear for weekends. And, you know, she just gave me a lot of freedom. to pursue this. I didn't really think that this is what I would end up doing, even though my entire life revolved around it. So of course, you know, the idea of the blind spot or the thing that's sitting right in front of you. I thought I would go to school and either become something to the effect of a lawyer or a chef or a stand-up comedian or, you know, something to that effect. And what ended up happening was, is as I started to go to college, I thought, well, psychology is probably the best thing, you know, for me to actually study and the most efficient use of my time. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that as I was in psych classes that I had actually been studying psychology for the last 6.5, 7 years without really knowing it.
Absolutely.
And when I really got involved in it, my teacher said, you know, well, it's funny that you're studying psychology because shamanism really birthed psychology. You know, if you really think about it, the idea of emotional wellness and our relationship to our environment, it was an effect of that. And so I had been studying it all of these years without really realizing it. Along that way, one of the methods or ideas or principles is that you have to study a form of divination, whether you feel like you want to use it or not. Because our ability to divine information is a way of putting us in relationship to the environment. It's a way of understanding the influences. Really, the term divination for me means the ability to listen profoundly to the influences and messages that are manifesting in our life, whether it is a mathematical formula that we use to look at our astrology, whether it is tea leaves in the bottom of a cup, whether it is a deck of cards, stones, sticks, feathers. There's literally thousands of forms of divination, which I find fascinating, that there would be so many if it wasn't so necessary,
right?
So needed. So we had to study, and my mother got a tarot deck when I was about 12. And it just so happened to be called the Mythic Tarot. And the Mythic Tarot, if you know it, is based on Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was interesting is that as a child, I had a voracious appetite for one thing, and it was Greek mythology. I was reading about Greek mythology at the age of 6 and 7.
Oh, that's
Yeah, it's just this one peculiar thing. So as my mother like shuffled the cards and laid them out, I knew all of these stories. I knew all of the names. I knew all of the myths. I understood because I had also been, you know, reading Joseph Campbell as well at the age of 11 and 12. And I understood that there is this energy around mythology and storytelling and that this was imperative to know. And it's how cultures lived and continued on was through storytellers. So I just knew what these cards meant. And I was able to talk to my mom about it very clearly and concisely, so much so that she started bringing over all of her friends. So I started, my mother was pimping me to do readings by the age of 13. Yeah. So I was talking about these wildly inappropriate things. Just wildly inappropriate things for a 13-year-old to start talking about, like divorce and this and that and affairs and, you know, betrayals. And I just knew these ideas and concepts from mythology. So really, in a way, I am a living student of this beautiful and profound matriarchal idea of how stories teach us and how they guide us and instruct us and how, in a way, you know, we are carrying that on. And it unites us all together. It just ties us all together. Another thing she used to say was, well, if you go back far enough in everybody's family of origins, we all studied shamanism. It lives in your bones.
Mm-hmm.
It lives in your DNA. It is a part of your makeup. Because I had a lot of all hesitations or concerns about studying indigenous cultures. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, if you just go back far enough, we all come from the same lines. So I was just really able to dive into it. And I was informed by Greek mythologies and paganism and Native American cultures. So I'm a bit of a mutt. My lineages were not from one specific lineage. They were from all over. So I really got this like very wide, broad perspective of metaphysics and spirituality.
That's incredible. And I love that it's very beautifully stated that if you go back far enough, and I find that in a lot of healers that I interview and healers that I work with and know that there's some form of whether it's shamanism or healing in even in their like near like recent lineage, and it may be different forms, like you were saying, of divination, but it does show that we're all kind of connected and that's it, divination and healing are present in so many different cultures. So I think that's beautifully stated. So I have to ask, is that still, you said the mythic, the deck is Mythic Tarot?
Yes, it's called the Mythic Tarot, and I believe they're still producing it.
Is that still the deck that you prefer to read with? Do you work with many?
Oh, that's really funny. You know, so at one point in time, like everybody I think who studies the tarot, I probably had 60 decks, you know, like wrapped up in scarves and stuck in little baskets and in pouches and,
totally,
you know, all over the place. You know, I remember fondly, you know, using the Rider-Waite deck, and I remember the Mythic Tarot deck. And, you know, back in the day when I was looking at these, so that's 30 years ago, there were just very peculiar decks. Like I remember the Aquarian Tarot, and then there was one called the Tarot of the Cat People. And
that too, yeah.
Right? Like there were all these very peculiar decks, which even made them more interesting. And then I remember like really getting into the Mother Peace deck by Vicki Noble. Yeah. You know, one of the first round decks that I had ever seen. And, you know, so I think at one point in time, I probably owned 40 or 50 tarot decks. What ended up happening for me was really understanding the difference between a tarot deck and a cartomancy deck, which, you know, the tarot deck is the classic 78 structured tarot of and origins. And it has the divination of suits, and a cartomancy deck can kind of go in any direction they want. It doesn't have any structure. It doesn't have any form. It can be a deck of playing cards. People would consider the medicine cards a cartomancy deck. And I personally really got into the tarot, and I really liked the idea of the major and the minor arcana and the suits and the royalty cards, and looking at it as a form of psychological progression and evolution. So what ended up happening is that I fell in love with, actually, the Native American tarot deck was one of my favorites because it was really a classical deck. It didn't have a lot of variations. And I have used something called the Robin Wood deck for about 15 years. And that is really a pagan deck. It has a lot of Celtic influences. It is based on the imagery primarily of the Rider-Waite deck. And it's just a little more colorful and a little more graphic. It has a beautiful image of the death card, which is a hooded figure carrying a scythe, that on the scythe there is a flag, and the flag has a flower blooming on it. And the death card, the death figure, is blocking a pathway, and it's holding out its right arm, offering a different path. And I think of that as being a very interesting moment in time, where I think we all make a decision in our own life about whether we're stubborn or whether we're right or whether we're arrogant. Like, we are just going to go down this fucking road.
Oh, yeah.
And nothing's going to stop us. And we're going to get what we want the way we want it. And I believe that almost every time we're given a moment of going, are you really sure? You could go this way. And we go, no, it's got to be this way. And in a way, I think, you know, that's also an initiation into seeing what the consequences are of our actions and looking at that moment in time. So it is classic. It is really based on a majority of the symbols from the Rider-Waite, but it does have a little bit of a difference and a flair. It's a little more colorful and graphic, and I personally have loved it. And it's one of the decks that I train all of my students on, because I feel like it is rooted in these original symbols that we have come to identify as the Tarot.
Yeah. I'm going to have to, I'll link to all of the decks that you've discussed in the notes to this podcast, but I'm going to have to, that's one that I haven't seen in person, and I'm going to have to take a look at.
It's beautiful. Like, I actually think Robin is a wonderful woman. She's a brilliant artist, so she did all of the paintings herself, and she's incredibly talented. It's not, and what I find interesting about it is that it's not my sense of style. However, I feel like it really does offer a person the ability to connect to the imagery while you are creating the story of what all the cards are trying to say together. For example, in this deck, the card of judgment is a cauldron with a beautiful woman erupting from the cauldron. She is naked. Her hands are up in the air wide. Her hands are also in the symbol of American Sign Language for I love you. And behind her is a phoenix. It's a very bright and dynamic imagery about transforming judgment and really being able to look at judgment and turning it into self-love. Mm-hmm. And the rebirth that comes from that, like when we begin to really step out of the critic and the part of us that informs our decisions or holds the imagery in our head. I believe we all have some sort of inner critic like that, that says, well, you know, you're going to do it like this and you're going to do it like that. And, you know, you're still unlovable and you're still overweight and, you're still this and you're still that and nobody likes you. And I believe that that image actually informs how we make decisions. You know, it influences our preferences and our choices. And we don't stop to realize that. So part of the initiation through working through the mystical part of the major arcana is we reach this point where we really have to dive deep and transform this energy. And it's a profound moment when we really begin to start accepting ourselves and stop the cycle of judgment, of self-judgment, and externalizing judgment. So it's a little different card. The imagery is a little different, but I think that that's more relatable.
Oh, for sure. I think that that's, I love that, because I think that in the traditional, well, when I say traditional, in the Smith Rider-Waite deck and the more directly derived versions of Smith Rider-Waite, it's a dark card, and a lot of people are kind of scared or intimidated by the imagery as a result of that. And I think that just the way that you described that visually is it's transformative and beautiful, and it's a really it's a necessary process, but it doesn't have to be, you know, all in darkness. There's definitely light elements to it too.
Right. I think it really talks about our trajectory, right? It says that we get to feel the way we want to feel. And there might be difficulties or hard lessons along the way, but it does indeed allow us to say, you know, it can feel that way. It can be good. I can be free. I love the fact that in the image she's naked. And, you know, sadly, she's flawlessly naked, like she's flawless, like not one ounce of body fat, which would be better for me to relate to. Like, so, you know, it's this idea of I don't need any pretense. Mm-hmm. Exactly what I'm experiencing, I am, and therefore I'm okay presenting this to the world. It's naked wisdom. It's wisdom without any kind of container or attachment, and it becomes a very beautiful place. We spend a lot of our lives offering up our innocence and our naivety for knowledge and wisdom, and I think that we get to a point where we have to return to this place of going, yeah, but the parts of me that are gentle and simple and sacred and kind and innocent are still there and can still navigate this world.
Absolutely.
And we can love that. We can love the goofy. We can love the simple. We can love the naive. We don't have to sacrifice everything.
Absolutely. I think that that's, I now I'm like, I have to buy this deck because I'm very yeah, so you sold me on it. So that's the deck that you say that you start your students on. And another,
that is correct.
Okay. So another, it's funny because when I first started working with you, one of the pieces of advice that you shared with me was that when you're teaching your students, you pretty much encourage them to not kind of consult with outside texts for the first year, except with the exception of Tarot Constellations by Mary Kay Greer, who I am obsessed with and adore. Can you tell us a little bit more about the resources that you do recommend? Because a lot of the listeners are just starting out with tarot and they're learning and they're kind of finding their way along the path. So in addition to this deck and Tarot Constellations, can you tell us a little bit more about what you would recommend as you're learning?
Oh, that's really, it's a great question. So first of all, I do believe that everybody should read Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I do suggest this is because I think it's necessary that when we do a reading for somebody that we really have the capacity to understand that we have to take on the scope of their evolution. That, of course, we can answer a question about a sense of timing, or we can answer a question about something very, something very relatable. But these are all steps on a bigger picture. And I feel like it's really important that my students are actually able to understand that when we do a divination, we're basically tapping into all of this collective conscious around telling a story. Like, we are here to tell this person a story. And these are the influences and the players. And so I believe that some of these are necessary to understand, and that when we begin to work with somebody or do a reading, we also need to understand who they are as an individual and what they are probably going to choose and make choices. You know, it is a free will planet. We have to really respect the fact that when we do a reading, we're actually tapping into just one of the expressions of the quantum possibilities that they have. And that's a lot to take on. I know that sounds really, really heady, but it's also something very simple that we can look at. So I always have my students read The Goddesses in Every Woman and The Gods in Every Man by Jean Shinoda Boylan. She's a PhD and a Jungian analyst from, you know, way back in the day. These books were really popular. I read them when I was 15. And she was a big leader in the eco-spirituality movement. But she did a lot of work in the idea of archetypes. And I believe that it's necessary to really understand, if we can, in that moment in time, the kind of archetypes that live within the person as they're drawing the cards, because this creates a large influence as to what that person is most likely going to choose. Mm-hmm. We present the options. We say, here in this reading, you have this option here. You can go down this road. You have this option here. You can go down this road. You have this option here. You can go down this road. This path is something that you know and you're totally comfortable with. We'll keep your life a certain way. This path might challenge you a little bit. This might be a path that no one would expect you to take. And we, at the end of the day, have to reconcile what choices we're going to make. And we will make choices based on where we're at in our process. And there is a certain probability that you will pick a certain thing. And I always like to tell the person that I'm reading for that you will most likely want to choose this because it might be the most comfortable or the most known or the most familiar to you. But what would it be like if you chose this? Mm-hmm. What would it be like if you chose that? Because I want as many options as possible. Right. I personally want all the different options as possible. So when we study the tarot, I think the first thing we have to do is realize that the tarot has a certain kind of set, understood, didactic knowledge You know, that's just out there. That's common. So I don't want them to know that in the beginning. I want them to start studying the tarot from a completely different point of view. I want them to start studying it from the nature of human psychology. I want them to study it from the nature of what is it like to get in touch with each one of these archetypes in your own nature? What would it be like for you to imagine yourself as the Emperor? What is the energy of that card like? What does it feel like to you? What is your understanding of it? How do you relate to that? Is it something that you feel positive about, or do you feel encumbered by it? Do you feel a limitation around it? Does it trigger you? These are all, I think, really important things to know when we begin to work with the tarot, and that it's work that we can do internally in and of ourselves. I also tell students in the beginning, like, don't focus on the reverse. Mm-hmm. Because we always want to present something in the most freeing way and also the most encumbered way, you know, the most limited way. Mm-hmm. We want to talk about what it's like to experience the fertility, the creativity, the sense of emotional fulfillment of the Empress. We also want to talk about how she is this wellspring of space. Like, she really understands space. Space is really important to her, the way the energy is flowing in the space, how she is being represented in the space. But we also know that she can be a martyr. We also know that she can take on too much responsibility. We also know that she can hold a specific idea and she can get incredibly emotional and moody. Mm-hmm. If she's not creating, or as I like to say, you know, she can become quite a bitch and she can become really manipulative and be really sneaky and not be really upfront and kind of start rumors and stories. And if you want to take a gypsy witch, you know, kind of perspective on it, you can say you'll get pregnant. You'll make a really good decision that will bring a lot of finances into your life. There's so many different ways that you can go. Mm-hmm. And as you begin to understand what it means to be in human relationship, you begin to understand what you're the most attracted to in the tarot. And that, I think, is really important to know prior to really diving into studying it. I think it's important to find out what really attracts you to the tarot. What is the most interesting part of it? I find the tarot is a massive form of therapy. And I like to use the tarot as a really strong therapeutic model for helping people get in touch with their emotional constructs and, you know, begin their own psycho-spiritual journey. So again, I like my students to read things like The Power of Myth by Joseph Campbell, Understand Gods and Goddesses in Every Man and Woman. Of course, they just so happen to be based on Greek mythology. Then I like for them to read The Tarot Constellations by Mary Kay Greer, because what it does is it unites all of the cards in the deck together, which is quite profound. And actually, the theory was developed by Angelis Arian and Joseph Campbell, which is an interesting, you know, side note, that Joseph Campbell was involved with the tarot. Okay. So,
yeah, I didn't know
you
that.
Know, this is a really fascinating study when you start to see 78 cards united together and linked together, creating distinct personality traits and paths. And then the student goes, oh my God, all of these cards are interrelated to each other. And again, that just opens more of the curiosity, more of the creativity. So then once they start really studying that, then I say, you know, anything by Angelis Arian and anything by Mary Kay Greer, I think, are fantastic books. There are some current authors that I think have their finger on some good pulses. I believe one of them is Janina Renee. And there are some really excellent books about tarot reversals, very peculiar niche studies of the tarot, like just studying the cups, you know, just really understanding the symbology of the cups and what's found in them. So I think that those are helpful in developing your own intuition and developing your own relationship to the cards. I personally found that studying a cardomancy deck, you know, the playing cards, also gives a nice, it gives a nice supporting element. It helps you to read timing. I've always found that timing was quite mysterious in the tarot. Like, you can tell summer, spring, fall, winter. You can tell kind of time of day. You can see a repetition of numbers. You can get a sense of speed mm-hmm. or accuracy from the backgrounds in the tarot. Like, okay, so this is a bright noon sky, so that translates into sooner rather than later. This is a dark sky and there's no moon in it, so that means we're talking about winter, so that means everything's going to slow down in the sense of timing and how fast this is going to actually manifest in the reading. But when I started studying cardomancy decks and using a deck of playing cards, one of the first things that just blew my mind about it was somebody said, yeah, there's 52 cards in a playing deck, 52 weeks in a year, four seasons. There's 13 weeks in each season. There's 13 cards in each suit.
Oh, wow.
And they just went on. And I was like, oh, my God. So they said, actually, you know, learning to use a deck of playing cards can really help you pinpoint accuracy.
Wow, I've never
and how fast
with them. That's awesome.
Right, my head exploded when they said that. You know, like, I was like, oh my God, like that's such a great concept. And there is a translation of that knowledge in the tarot. So you can actually begin to see a really interesting method come out to actually be able to predict timing. Which I always thought was something that of course every client wants. I tell my students to be really strong, and helping them to understand that they're telling a story gets them out of the idea that they have to deliver. You know, that it's not a performance, that they're not attempting to be God.
Right.
They're attempting to help this person connect to something potentially greater than themselves. And all they have to do is deliver a message. And to really get grounded and rooted in that and not feel like that their job is to perform, which is why I have students really practice on timing. Like, I do make students say, you know, exact dates and get really specific. So that way they can understand how to read the mistakes. Mm-hmm. And understand how to read the influences that are going on. And I don't mind saying it was a mistake, because I think of those as learning lessons.
Right.
It's like, yeah, you didn't quite see that. Let me show you where it was. It was right here and here and here. And here are these things to pay attention to. Here is this dynamic interaction between these cards. So I need them to learn to become storytellers. And really begin to dive into the psychology of it, because when we do a reading, even if it's simple, we have to realize that we are entering somebody's psyche. You know, like, this is not for entertainment purposes. Like, we're really stepping across a border into somebody's psyche, and to really honor that and begin to, you know, create a sacred space for that to occur.
That's something I definitely learned from you in our work early on, was that I remember you saying to me, like, be careful because people want to use it as a party trick, and make sure that you treat yourself and, you know, tarot as a divination with such respect. And that was a big message for me. And I definitely have, you know, now learned to respect it in that way. But I think it can be very tempting when you become adept at it and people are like, oh, my friend's a reader, and just, like, you know, whip that out at any time. And you're right. You have to have such respect. And you've taught me that for, you know, the client, the process, the art of the, you know, tarot as divination itself. Mm-hmm.
Right, because we're really, you know, we're really taking that moment to stop the ordinary and enter into the non-ordinary, you know, and we can do that quite simply. You know, I can make that conscious decision to leave my upstairs come down into my office, you know, light a candle, sit, breathe, connect, and go into my own system and find a question and ask the universe for help. So I know we can do it with such ease, and I mean that as in so casual, but we really have to look at divination as being a profound form of being able to reconnect to the environment. Last night I was actually, it's funny you brought that up, last night I was asked to do, asked to help friends who run a theater company do their big gala event here. And they did something for Harry Potter. So they asked me if I would do readings at the event in the opening. And I said, of course, which I don't do. You know, I don't really do that kind of thing. But it was for them. And so as I was sitting there and I was reading, you know, the people that were there, somebody came up and said, you know, can you keep this to 5 minutes? Because there's about 50 people who want to talk to you. And I said, no, I'm sorry, but no, no, you can't rush me. And, I won't this is what I do. This isn't for entertainment purposes. This is something serious. And if somebody's going to come up and ask me a serious question, I'm going to do my best to deliver a serious answer. And hopefully I'll do it in a really humorous way that'll make them laugh and take it in. But, you know, I will give them my full attention.
Absolutely.
And I will make it a very private and personal and sacred moment. And I think that our world has become too casual. I think that we now think that we can do ritual via an app, and I think that we can meditate via our phone, and all of those things are good. I think they're opening up different elements of our brain that we maybe never used. But I do think it's kind of brought around a certain casualness around ritual, you know, a certain nonchalance about stepping into this moment and going, no, I'm really making this relationship to this greater thing, for lack of a better word, as we say, the spirit that moves through all things. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really looking to connect to this, to ask for help around a certain subject. So I never, ever, ever do a reading without a question. Mm-hmm. The person has to have an intention, because I just don't feel like the world works that way. You get answers if you want to know, but you have to be willing to ask the question. And if you're willing to ask the question, that means you're willing to take responsibility for the answer
right.
that you get that you may not like.
Right, right. I love that.
Right?
I had Mary Kay Greer on the podcast, who I, you know, also adore so much. And she similarly stated that it's, you know, it really needs to start with, and usually people come to reading because they have a question and sometimes they're, you know, not comfortable stating it. But like you said, putting that out energetically to the universe has been saying, yes, I own this question. And I also own what comes with it. You know,
that is correct. Absolutely correct. Because people will walk in and sit down and say, well, I don't know why I'm here. And I'll look at them and say, well, I don't either. So that's great. Because I'm not here to perform.
Yes.
I mean, I do want to tell you a story, but it's not performance art.
Right.
It is taking the moment to go into a state of mutual cooperation. Like, we are mutually agreeing. One of the greatest sentences that I had heard was from a man named Thomas Males, who was Fool's Crow's scribe, who was a Native American shaman. And he said, nothing can happen without a mutual cooperation.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And I do believe that. Like, marriage is a mutual cooperation. Friendships are mutual cooperation. We're saying, we're agreeing to go through this together. When we do a reading and we do healing work, it has to be a mutual cooperation. Nothing can happen. So the person has to come to the moment and bring themselves and really take the time to ask the question. And sometimes people will come into my office and we spend the entire appointment formulating the question. Mm-hmm. And then I don't do the reading.
Right.
And then I make them come back. for the reading.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was time well spent.
Yeah.
I feel like that was great, you know, to really formulate what you really want to know, because you will get an answer.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh my gosh, I have like a million more. I could literally talk to you like for the rest of this lifetime and many more. But because we're getting towards the end of the segment, I want to ask you, because I ask this of everyone and I'm dying to know your specific answer, because I don't know that I know we've discussed some of these answers, but do you have a favorite tarot card? And if so, why?
Oh, okay. My favorite tarot card. Well, that's a good question. I think, it's a really tough one. I think one of my favorite cards has to be the Ace of Swords.
Oh, beautiful. I love it.
And I think the reason why is because I feel like when we're really looking at that card, that it has the opportunity to really change our lives, because it goes so much into the idea and realm of how we think and the way we perceive, and coming up with something brilliant and letting it kind of be the way that we navigate the world. You know, that Ace of Swords has, you know, the page, the knight, the queen, the king, all in it. I think that when this card appears, it really is a means of an answer to a prayer. I think of the aces in general as kind of like answers to prayers, things that we've really been wanting to see manifest on a specific level. So when this Ace of Swords comes into play, it's kind of like that piece of knowledge or information that you really have been feeling like you've needed in order to make a major change in your life, a confirmation of some sort of intuition comes forward, and you get to make that change or not.
Yes.
And that's up to you.
It's so funny that you say that, and that we were just talking about you reading at a like unrelated Harry Potter themed event, because I always liken the Ace of Swords, which I adore, as kind of the kids when they find out that they're witches and wizards and about to go to Hogwarts. And it's like, exactly what you said. You find out that's like thing. And it's almost like this little superpower that's unlocked, you know? So I love that card as well for the very same reason. So that's beautiful. Do you have a card that you feel that you really embody?
Oh, that's a good one. I do that I embody. I do think that I embody quite a bit of the Empress.
I love that.
And the reason why is that I've always been involved in female arts. I've always been involved in therapy. All of my friends were women. All of my teachers actually were women. All of these major players in my life were female. And I was really emotionally adept early on in life. And I had all of these qualities of this creativity and this empathy and this martyrism and this, you know, sense of taking on other people's responsible energies and holding those things in my body. So I do feel that that's always been a card that I have been really affiliated to. And, you know, my friends would joke that I'm a queen, you know, like I really, you know, I have been in positions of power very early in my life. Starting from the age of 18, I have been in positions of power and authority, talking to the World Health Organization by the time I was 22. You know, things like this, you know, like I have always had this kind of luck that I call it. But, you know, I definitely have that. And she's a little mischievous. So that always has suited me very well.
I love that.
Not my partners, but me, you know.
Do you have a card that you strongly dislike, like when you pull it for yourself or you get it in a reading related to you that you're like, oh God, not that one again?
Oh yeah, there's two cards that absolutely drive me fucking crazy. One of them is the Three of Swords. I swear to God, I just, every time I see that card, I just want to bang my head into a wall.
Yeah.
And Mary actually wrote a very beautiful sentence about it that I do quote about the Three of Swords, which is, well, the beautiful part of this card is that you get to know that you feel. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, oh, great. I'm so lucky that I get to feel this pain. It's like, that's it. Oh.
It's so funny. I think of her too with that, because when I get it, when I'm reading for others and I'm like, oh fuck, now I have to explain this, right?
Right.
I think of her description of, and in my deck, it's Jennifer Aniston, because it's kind of like the sad bastard card, right? Of like, she's,
oh,
like,
stop, right.
There's always like a tragedy for poor Jen and the tabloids. And I always, you know, do quote Mary Kager on that. And I also say, like, you know, it really is, the only way out is through, and you can really kind of, you have to go into it to get to the other side. I don't love that one either. I hear you on that.
Yeah. So whenever, and I always used to pull that card around my relationships, and obviously it was accurate because every one of those relationships failed. Like, so there was a certain level of stable predictiveness about it. Like, if I drew that card in any relationship, that relationship ended. It was remarkable. And the other card that I found really difficult was the card of Temperance. Mm-hmm. I found it difficult to understand. Yeah. And I also found it to be one of the most mysterious cards when you look at interpretations, just kind of historically. There's not really a lot of information about that card. So really, what was this angel with its toe in the water and one foot on land with the little triangle of its heart juggling things? And, the, you know, it's like the angel, it wasn't something that I could relate to. So, you know, I really had to take a lot of time to understand that card. It probably took me about 10 years of contemplation to be able to really sit and look at that card and move through it in a reading easily, instead of going, well, you know, like, what, I don't really know what this means. Is it a tempering force? Is it tempering yourself? Is it learning how to be in alignment? Does it represent your own personal values? Does it represent a conflict? What is this nature that this is trying to bring through? It took me forever to understand that card. I still don't think I understand it in its entirety. I really don't.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like it is a very layered and mysterious card, and it always was funny to me because I've studied the astrology of tarot, and it's ruled by Sagittarius, and I am Sagittarius, and I'm like, why do I find this card one of the most baffling? I struggle. Not that I dislike it, but I struggle with fully, like, you know, understanding it from a 360 degree perspective the way that I do some other cards. So I hear you on that as well. Yeah.
Right.
So the other thing before we go, do you have, I know you're always, you teach a lot of classes, you do some really interesting retreats. Do you have anything coming up that you want us to know about that I can kind of link back to on the podcast?
Oh, that's really sweet. Actually, no, I took a year off of teaching this year to take a break and, you know, kind of be quiet. I've been teaching for 25 plus years now.
Oh, wow.
So this year was a break. I haven't taken a sabbatical in about 15 years.
Oh my God.
So yeah, so I'm still seeing clients and I still treat people, but I'm not teaching right in this moment.
Okay. Amazing. Well, I will definitely, obviously link back to Songlines as well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, which I love, and it's so beautifully done with really, really thoughtfully chosen stones. And I just, I mean, it's beautiful as well as just very thoughtfully and energetically designed. So I'm gonna link back to that. But thank you so much. Like I said, I could literally talk to you forever. So it was hard to narrow it down to like the key points, because I have a million things I still want to ask you. But I would love to have you back as well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Christopher.
Oh, you're very, very welcome.
All right. Hey guys, so I know this episode was a bit longer than usual, so I'm going to get to the recap quickly and all the announcements at the end as quickly as I can. But just Christopher brings so much knowledge and just literally decades of practice and shamanism to the table. So I wanted to get as much of the content to you guys as possible. I literally could have talked to him for hours on end, but I think I got most of the key points for our intro episode and definitely want to bring him back. Okay, for our recap, July came in hard and fast, like Miley on a wrecking ball, aka the Chariot. And this card really reminds us that yes, there may be victorious energy coming in and bringing in something we desire, but it also reminds us to really process emotions before proceeding, especially being in the middle of eclipse season, Mercury retrograde. But that being said, our other card, Three of Cups, indicates that we'll probably be celebrating a new source of abundance or success with our core peeps this month. So that's exciting. And this week we have the Knight of Cups, another a good energy, Dolly Parton, you know, romantic connectivity creation card coming in for the week. All right, so quick announcements, Instagram Live this Sunday tonight as usual, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. You can write questions in advance, and if you can't watch the live, it's still up for 24 hours after that segment. So if I get to your question and you can't like physically be present during that window, you'll still get your reading answered. So stay tuned. You can log in for your chance to get a free mini reading this Sunday at 8 p.m. and every following Sunday at 8 Eastern Standard. I'm also launching my first ever retreat, Witches Ritual. And for those of you who are looking to practice your magic in style, this October 27th, retreat in the Hamptons is definitely for you. The retreat includes luxury accommodations in a Hamptons estate, yoga, breathwork, Reiki, tarot reading, cacao ceremonies, magical AF gift bags, delicious plant-based meals all weekend for an incredibly affordable price. Think Goupin Canyon Ranch vibes for the same price as retreats that are held in bunk beds and tents in the woods. So also, if you book before August, you can get $100 off with code CityWitchVIP. Hurry up, because we've already booked a couple slots and we literally just launched. So you can check that out at CardsyB on Instagram and BadassBitchesTarot.com for more info. Thank you guys so much. I hope that you're continuing to survive eclipse season and Mercury retrograde. And as always, stay magical AF.